Hey, good morning, everybody. We are going to look at the beginning of Parshas Vayigash. So let's read source number one. The Torah tells us as follows. This is the very first verse in this week's Torah portion. Vayigash, I love Yehuda. Vayomer bi Adoni, yidaber na avdecha davar beozne Adoni, v'al yichar apecha b'avdecha ki chamocha chiparo. Then Judah approached him and said, "If you please, my lord, may your servant speak a word in my lord's ears, and let not your anger flare up at your servant, for you are like Pharaoh." This is the very, very emotional part of Sefer Bereishis, where Yehuda runs up to Yosef. At this point, Yehuda doesn't even know that he's talking to Yosef. He just knows that he's talking to a very, very cruel leader in Egypt. At this point, the leader in Egypt is making a claim on Binyamin. Binyamin stole my goblet. He has to be my servant. And this is part of the general narrative that we are familiar with. So I'd like to begin our class this morning, which focuses on 19th century biblical commentaries, with the Netziv in source number 2. The Netziv is focusing on the beginning phrase of the Pasuk, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. And Yehuda approached. What was the purpose of this approach? Asks the Netziv as follows in source number 2. Lo nisba'er lefi hapshat hagasha zu. From the simple reading of the text, we don't really understand why Yehuda felt the need to approach this person. We'll call him Yosef, but just to recall again, at that moment in time, Yehuda didn't know it was Yosef. So, lo nisba'er lefi hapshat hagasha zu, lihiskarev liYosef mahi. We don't really understand at this point why Yehuda felt the need to approach Yosef. V'chi Yosef lo haya shomea devara v'imakom sh'amad adko. Has Yosef been unable to hear Yehuda's words up to this point? Yosef was able to hear every other conversation that he has had with his brothers up to now. So suddenly Yosef is hearing impaired. Why did Yehuda feel the need to approach Yosef? That's the Netziv's question. Vigam harei hamelitz binotam. Additionally, we know that there was a melitz. What does melitz mean? Melitz is an interpreter. There was somebody there that was doing the translating. Yosef wasn't speaking in Hebrew to his brothers. That perhaps would have given away his identity. So he's speaking in the Egyptian tongue. So anyways, there's no real reason to approach Yosef, but seemingly, I think that's what they say, they can't even communicate. Yehuda is speaking in Hebrew. Yosef, as far as they know, only understands the Egyptian tongue. So what's the point of approaching? The Hadrash Yadua Hagasha L'Gimel Devarim. So it is well known that there are three different understandings of the word Vayigash that the rabbis explain. The rabbis comment the word vayigash means, or reflects rather, the concept of approaching for war. It can reflect the concept of prayer, and can also reflect the concept of appeasement. So the word vayigash is a very, very powerful word. But says in Netziv, aval hapshat, adai nidvakesh v'yivor lefaninu. But the simple understanding remains to be seen. It's not entirely clear why Yehuda felt the need to approach Yosef as opposed to speaking from afar. Yes, Ali.
I think the word approach also connotes a element of respect. Like if you're in court, you approach the bench, right. You show respect.
Very nice. Good. That's a very, very interesting observation, and you will see what the Netziv says smacks a little bit of what you're suggesting. So let's read on inside in source number 2, paragraph number 2. Yidaberna avdecha davar. We know, we just read, that the Torah records that Yehuda approaches Yosef and he says, "I like to speak a matter be'ozne adoni, in the ears of my master." So the Netziv first notes that the word davar is altogether extraneous. Hai davar miyusar. The word davar is extraneous. Uma haya chaser, im haya kasuv bimikra, yidaber na avdecha beozne adoni. Wouldn't the pasuk have read just as smoothly? Yehuda's words, which would have been just as well spoken, Had Yehuda said, I like to speak in my master's ears. What does the word davar add? Let me say a matter in my master's ear. Why is that necessary? Achein, mitchila yesh leva'er mashma'us be'oznei. So it says in the Siv, the way to understand really the two questions that he's asking, let's just recap very quickly the two questions. Number one, what's the point of approaching altogether? Doesn't Yosef hear the brothers in the room where they're speaking? And number two, what is the meaning of the word davar? That Yehuda says, I'd like to say a matter, I'd like to say something in your ears, that the word something, davar, is not necessary. So writes the Netziv, in order to understand both questions, we have to have a better understanding of the word be'ozne adoni, in the ears of my master. The word be'ozne, or an ozen in Hebrew, means ears. But what does it mean in this context? V'harishonim zal pirshu mi'inyan sheyichnisu hadivarim be'oznecha. So the Rishonim, by and large, understand that when Yehuda said, I like to speak something in the ears of my master, what was Yehuda really asking for?
Privacy.
Not privacy, that's gonna where he's going to go. Not privacy, but when I speak to you, I hope my words are able to enter your ears. Really, what am I asking you?
Pay attention.
That you'll pay attention. Exactly. That you'll give consideration to what I am saying. That's what the Netziv quotes in the Rishonim. Again, V'harishonim zal pirshu, mi'inan sheyichnisu hadivarim be'oznecha. I'd hope that my words will enter into your ears. Uve emes, writes the Netziv, in truth, kach mitparish loshon hamikra b'sefer devarim. This is actually the way the word ozen is used in the book of Deuteronomy, Perek Lamed Aleph, Neged kol Yisroel be'oznehem. The word is used in the context of understanding. Fine. Vayidaber Moshe be'oznei kol kahal Yisroel. Moses spoke in the ears of the Jewish people. So do you think that Moshe literally spoke in the ears of the Jewish people? Moshe went up to them and whispered in each of their ears? Of course not. What does it mean? That Moshe spoke and his words entered into the ears, in the sense that they understood it, they listened, they were open and receptive to the words that Moses was saying. So the point is that sometimes when the Torah uses the word ozen, it is making a reference to this idea that the word should be heard, understood, and considered. Aval, the Netziv goes on in source number 2, paragraph number 3. Aval, yesh mashmos acher lazeh halashon. There are other connotations of the word ozen. Kimo bamidbar yud aleph, as in perek yud aleph of bamidbar, vayihi ha'am kimis onim ra be'oznei Hashem. The people were complaining, an evil complaint in the ears of God. So that doesn't mean understanding. They were hoping that God will understand our complaints. And the Netziv doesn't think that that's the correct understanding of that word. V'aperisham, the word oznei in that context means samuch l'shchinaso yisbarach. It implies proximity. Be'oznei Hashem, God was in the camp of the Israelites. So when they were complaining, their complaints went directly to the Almighty because the Almighty was in their midst. And that was why it was so bad, as the Netziv writes, "Kimivur Hashem demishum hachi ne en shumia." That's why they were punished immediately, because there was a proximity that the Jewish people had to God. So if they were being nunniks, if they were complaining, so God hears it immediately and punishes them immediately. V'chein hamedaber belachash shelo yishmeu rabim. Similarly, when a person speaks quietly to somebody else, so that others should not hear, elahu, just the individual that you're speaking to, mikri midaber be'oznav. That is also termed speaking in someone's ear. V'lefi zeh, hachanami mashmaus be'oznei adoni bilechisha. Writes in a tziv, that's the intended meaning that Yehuda was using. When Yehuda said, yidaber na avdecha davar be'oznei adoni, I'd like to speak in my master's ears, he wasn't saying, I hope my words penetrate, although that certainly is true too. But Yehuda was saying, I like to speak, as you said, in privacy. I like to speak in close proximity to you, Yosef, shelo yishmu kol hanitzavim, so that the other people in the room should not hear what we are saying.
Why?
Oh, asks Alan, for those of you watching the World Wide Web, Alan Bellinson asks a fantastic question. What's the necessity to have such private words? Very good, very good. So the Netziv goes on to address that in the very next paragraph. So in source number 2, now we're looking at paragraph number 4. The inyan shel ha-mevukash. What's the essence, the reason that this request is being made on the part of Yehuda to have a private conversation with Yosef? The ha'achim amru mitchila asher yimtze oso v'mes. When the brothers were accused of stealing the goblet, what was their initial reaction? So their initial reaction was, whoever is found with the goblet should be put to death. Because they were so confident that they didn't take it, they were trying to make a point by saying, whoever stole that goblet, whoever is guilty, should be put to death. Kedin u'mishpat hagonev mibeis hamelech. That is the law of somebody that steals from the king's palace. Not all theft is equal. Petty theft from a dollar store is morally abhorrent and unacceptable, but you can't necessarily compare that to somebody who tries to steal from the king's palace. So if someone steals from the king's palace, there is a much more severe punishment. It's death. V'hamoshel amar hu yali le'eved. And this ruler, again, unbeknownst to the brothers, it was Yosef, this ruler said, no, I'm not asking for anybody to be put to death. I am going to demand that they become a slave. Kolomar, and this is a very interesting observation of the Netziv, Eneni Melech, writes the Netziv, Yosef is saying, I am not a king. Ve'eni yachol le'ansho Yoser minimusei hamedina l'chol adam. And I am not empowered to apply a punishment above and beyond the regular law that applies to the common man. Meaning Yosef says to the brothers, whoever is found with a goblet, that person will be a servant to me. Because that's the general law. If someone is caught stealing, they are indebted to the one they stole from. I'm not the king, and I can only apply the common law. V'hine, achar hatzas Yehuda, and we know that Yehuda's response to this, he has the following offer. Yehuda says to this viceroy, I'd like to stay back as the servant in the place of my brother who was found guilty of theft. But that also doesn't follow the law of the land. What are nimusim in modern Hebrew? Nimusim in modern Hebrew are manners. The Netziv is using that word to explain that this is the accepted practice in the land. So Yehuda is saying, okay, I understand you don't want to put the person to death because you're not going to consider yourself like a king, but you're going to apply the law of the land that the person should be indebted to you as a slave. Let's at least switch that so that I will be the slave and let my little brother go home. One second. V'ef shar lasos kein ela paro atzmo. But the problem is, Yehuda is caught. Because Yosef is saying, well, I'm not going to put the person to death. But the law of the land applies to me, so the person has to be a slave. But if Yosef is considering himself like a regular Joe, that's kind of funny because Joseph, right? But he's considering like a regular Joe. So I don't have the authority to switch the one who is guilty with somebody else. That's the problem. Meaning Yosef is saying, I'm not going to put him to death. I'm going to have him serve as a slave. But I also am not empowered to make a switch. Only the one who was caught with the item that was stolen is the one that can serve as a slave. V'alkein hutzrach Yehuda lahakdim v'lo mar liYosef. And that's why Yehuda had to approach Yosef and tell him, ki kamahu kiparo. You should treat yourself like Paro. You're not a regular Joe. You're the viceroy over Egypt. Yachol lasos davar shelo kinimusi hamedina. You can do something that does not follow the regular pattern of law of the land. So it's interesting. On the one hand, the fact that Yosef, this king, viceroy, is not considering himself like the king is advantageous because the punishment is not death. But on the other hand, to consider himself like a regular person is at a disadvantage to the brothers because Yosef is saying this is the law of the land, and the person who was caught with the item that was stolen is the only one who can serve as to pay the debt, has to serve the time. He did the crime. And Yehuda wants to give over the message to Yosef that no, you shouldn't consider yourself like a regular Joe. You have the power like the king has the power. One second. So now we can already begin to understand why Yehuda felt the need to approach the bench and share that information in private. Why? Think about it. You're a foreigner in a land that is quite harsh and perhaps evil, and you want to make a very significant political statement. You want to say that the second in command is just as powerful as the numero uno. That's not a very smart thing to say, right? You can imagine, given the incoming administration and the personalities that we're aware of, so if a person's going to be in the White House and they call the vice president Mr. President, one can imagine that's not going to go so well. Fair point, right? I think that's a fair observation, a fair guess of what might happen. So it's very, very tricky to give the second in command the kavod, the honor, as if you're the first in first command. So what does Yehuda think to himself? Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches the bench. Yidaber na avdecha davar be'oznei Adoni. May I say something, davar, just a small matter, in the ears of my master. I don't want this to be public. It doesn't look good for me as a foreigner to equate the ruler with the second in command. Writes in a tziv in the fifth paragraph. It was difficult for Yehuda to give over that message in front of all of the people who were there. Shelo ye'anesh gam hu gam Yosef. He was afraid of being punished, and he was also afraid of Yosef being punished, meaning the viceroy of being punished. Kasher yishma kedevar ma'ela velo yimcha. How can Yosef allow himself to be called Paro without making a macha, without saying, I'm not Paro? Very dangerous. And Yehuda understood that what he was doing was dangerous. And we have precedent for that, not chronologically, because this happened much earlier, but we know that the Gemara in Gittin tells us that at the moment when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came to Vespasian and he called in the emperor, everyone in the palace was ready to kill him. Because right. It was disrespectful to the current emperor to consider somebody else to be in control. The Netziv writes, "Kidisa begitin daf nunvav beis she'amar b'yochan men zakai le'as pasionos Vespasian shal malach malka." When he said to Vespasian, "Peace unto you, greetings to you, the king," hikbid harbe. Many people were very upset at Yochanan ben Zakkai. They wanted to throw him out of the palace. Va'amar le mechayev is kafla. You should be killed. Delo malka ana. Vikarisli malka. In fact, Vespasian himself said, you deserve to be killed. Put to death. I'm not the king and you called me a king. So Vespasian understood. He might have felt good to be called the king, but he understood he can't stand idly by and let that term of honor be thrown at him. He has to make it clear that he doesn't think he's the king. Ultimately, we know what happened. He was made the emperor. But the point is that it is considered to be very, very disrespectful and almost rebellious to accept a compliment in a political system, in a political structure, when you're not the one deserving of that title or of that compliment. And Yehuda understood that. Mishum hachi nitzrich Yehuda lahagid belashon mitzrayim b'lechisha b'oznei Yosef zehadavar. So Yehuda, apparently Yehuda knew how to speak the Egyptian language as well. I don't know if it's the same Egyptian as they speak in Egypt today, Arabic, whatever it may be. The point is, Yehuda understood that he needs to communicate something privately. So he switches from Hebrew to the vernacular, to let's call it Arabic, whatever it was, and he approaches the bench very, very quietly. Ubashir in derech eretz levakish b'moshel rav shiadar b'oznav. It's not easy to just simply approach the bench. That's not respectful. Al kein amar v'al yichar apicha b'avdecha. Please don't be mad at me that I'm going to approach you, that I'm going to whisper something in your ear. V'lefi zeh kach hemsheich hakosav. Now we can understand the way the pasuk flows. V'yigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches. Remember, the Tziv says, why does he approach? Doesn't Yosef hear him? L'daber b'lichisha, because he wants to speak quietly in private, b'losho Mitzrayim, in the Egyptian tongue, im Yosef. V'amar, and he says to Yosef, yidaber, and remember, this is before he's actually leaning over. He's just approaching. V'yigash elav Yehuda, right? Yehuda approaches. And he says, "Yedaber na avdecha davar beoznei Adoni." Can I say something in private to my master? Ve'al yichar apecha b'avdecha. Don't be mad at me that I'm approaching the bench to speak with you privately. Remember, what was the other question that Tziv had? That Tziv said, "What was the meaning of the word davar?" Then Tziv says, "It reflects something very, very small." I just have something very, very short to share with you. Privately, without having the interpreter interpret my words. Don't be mad at me. Don't be upset at me for this request. Because the hour is pressing. It's a pressing need. V'amar. So when we can assume that Yosef gives a nod, even though the Torah doesn't record it. So Yosef basically allows him to approach the bench. Yehuda leans over. And what's that short ma'amar katsar? What's that short little sentence that Yehuda shared with Yosef? It's three words. Ki chamocha Kiparo. You are like Paro. You're like Paro. Don't apply the regular rules of the land. You have more power. Now, I'm not looking for you to use that power to kill, but I'm looking for you to use that power to allow us to switch, that Binyamin will go back home and I will stay. V'amar ki chamocha kiparo. Milos elu, meaning these words, writes in the Tziv, Amar bilachisha alo zanav. These are the quiet words that Yehuda said in the ears of Yosef. V'achar kachizvir kama mukra chadavar latzeis mini musei hamedina ulahachlif osoa binyamin. And then Yehuda goes on to explain why it's so pressing that Yosef bends the rules and allows this switch that Binyamin can go back home because his father will die of the sorrow, so on and so forth. What's interesting to me, and I don't fully understand the continuation of the verses, because if you're asking me, I would say that the verses which follow, this whole emotional plea that Yehuda has because we have an elderly father, that probably should have been said quietly, because it's part of the plea to override the regular rules and let yourself rule like a paro. But that's not from the Tziv. You get the sense in the Tziv that it was only davar. It was ma'amar katsas, just a small little matter that I'm going to lean in. Ki chamocha kiparo. And then he goes back out and he gives the rest of the speech in front of everybody. But the rest of that speech is still trying to draw Yosef in so that he chooses to act like paro and allow for the switch from Binyamin to Yehuda.
But that's a sympathy. He's looking for sympathy.
Right, right. Okay.
He's got a righteous cause.
Okay, I understand that, but my point is simply that the Netziv makes it seem that Yehuda only leaned in to say three words. Ki chamocha kiparo. That's why Yehuda uses the word davar. I like to say a small matter, three words to you in private, ki chamocha kiparo. And then he steps back and he gives the whole speech. But what I'm trying to understand, but I have not fully worked through, is that the rest of the speech should also have been said in private. Because the entire thrust of the speech is saying, let's bend the rules.
the controversial language.
Right, was only those three words. Right. Exactly. Okay, so I think that that's correct, but it's still interesting to me that the point of that speech was to allow this viceroy to exercise his power and switch Yehuda with Binyamin. So that should have also been sent quietly, because that's that politically bold statement to make. So how much Yehuda said privately versus publicly is not entirely clear to me, although from reading the tzivit, you get the sense it was just those three words.
But you weren't there, and Yehuda was there, and
right.
He looked at Joseph in the eye,
right.
And he saw that maybe I should say this publicly.
Right, correct.
But we weren't there.
Right, that's correct. But I think, just to recap for a moment, why this tziv is so brilliant is because before we started this class, I think if I would have asked you to read Pasuk Yud Ches, the opening verse in this week's Torah portion, so you would have said that what's taking place here is that Yehuda basically approaches Yosef in front of everybody and says the following words out loud in front of everybody, right? That was said in front of everybody. And the answer is that's not really what happened. That there are a number of stages that are outlined in this verse. Vaygashi lav Yehuda. Yehuda takes the first step forward, and he says, "Bi Adoni yidaber na avdecha davar beozne Adoni," which means Yehuda took a step forward, and he says, "Please, can I say something in private beozne Adoni? Can I say something in private to you, my master?" Don't be upset at me for trying to speak with you in private. You're like Paro. And then he steps back. That's a whole different read than the way you and I would have read the verse without the Nitziv.
But shouldn't he have said the relationship between Benjamin and his father before he said, "I want to speak to you privately"?
Because, right, you're saying he should have made the argument first,
right.
And then he should have said, as the culmination, and you have the power to do this,
right.
Because you're like Paro. Right, it's an interesting point, Alan, I'm not sure. Okay, let's move on now to Rav Hirsch, who, to just the one line Rav Hirsch, one and a half lines, to be frank, but Rav Hirsch also is focusing on the words, Be'ozne Adoni. Can I say something in the ears of my master? What does it mean in the ears of my master? Writes Rav Hirsch in source number 3, Hareza bitui yafe lemishemoser es devarav leshikol daito shel acher. This is a perfect phrase to use when you want somebody else to give lots of thought and consideration to what you're saying. I think that that's the way the Netziv notes the verse is sometimes used. When it talks about Moshe speaking in the ears of the people, doesn't mean he went up to everybody's ears and said something softly in secret. The word, that phrase, Daber Be'ozne Adoni, means I hope you will give lots of consideration to the words that I'm saying. Einenu pone el rigishiosacha. This is interesting. What's regesh? Regesh is emotion. So the Netziv says that Yehuda's making the point that I'm not looking for you to react emotionally. Eineni pone el rig shiosecha. I am not turning to your emotion. Ela rochev sichlecha. I'm looking for your rochev is wide. Sichel is your intellect. I'm looking sort of for the breadth and the depth of your understanding. So you really consider what I am saying, you process it rationally, and you make a decision as such. Yehuda was trying to tell this person in charge, please don't react emotionally. You could imagine, when you're a person in charge, and someone steals your precious item, so you'd be burning with anger. So Yehuda is trying to make a plea that speaks to the intellect, and not the emotion. Which is, by the way, very interesting. It seems to go against a Ramban, which I did not include for you on the source sheet, but the Ramban notes that Yehuda's entire speech over here, going over the facts that we already know, The whole point, and Yosef already knew this also, not just because he was Yosef, but he heard it as the viceroy. He was part of the story. So the Ramban writes, the whole point of this speech was to arouse Joseph's mercy. Think about this old man. Think about how much he will suffer. We can't not allow Binyamin to go back home. It will devastate my father until the point of death. So the Ramban says that the whole point of Yehuda's words were to draw upon the heartstrings of this seemingly cruel ruler. And Rav Hirsch is saying, no, really, that phrase, Yedaberna avdecha davar be'oznei Adoni, is really drawing upon the intellect and not the emotion.
But that was not an intellectual approach, that was an emotional approach.
That's correct. I think if you look at the text, you do get a sense that it was much more emotional than it was rational. I guess the question is, are they really mutually exclusive? Maybe Yehuda is trying to say, I need you to think rationally about this as well as emotionally. Mm-hmm. Not sure. Okay, let's look.
The wider audience perhaps should have mercy in mind, but only the ruler should have.
Uh-huh. But what's the benefit of having the wider audience have mercy if they're not the ones making the decisions?
Because the ruler has to bear in mind that he cannot go against the will of his people.
Okay.
Every ruler, whether he's an autocrat or not, knows that there are limits to what his powers are.
Right. That's true. So you're saying, Dr. Namzer, that Yehuda was trying to basically rally the crowd so that it would be very hard for Yosef to take a strict approach to this matter, because he would have to bear the brunt of everybody around him who would like boo him.
Right.
It could be. Yeah, interesting. Okay. So let's look at the Malbim, another fantastic 19th century German commentary. Writes the Malbim as follows: Vayigash elav Yehuda, hamischayiv b'mishpat, yesh lefanav shnei derachim. Writes the Malbim that if somebody is found guilty for violating the law, so there are two ways to approach trying to get out of being in trouble, trying to get out of receiving punishment. Number one, o shivakesh zechus derech mishpat. Either you try to find some merit in the law. I don't know if that means you hire a good attorney and you try to find some legal loophole, or you try to vindicate yourself through whatever legal channels are available. That would be one way of dealing with the issue. O shivakish sheyimcho lo chata'o derech chesed. Another way of dealing with the issue is essentially begging for a pardon, asking the one in charge to be merciful and to let it slide. V'yesh shnei havdalim b'nehem. And there are two differences between those approaches. I'm sure if we would sit down right now and make a list, we ourselves could come up with even more than two differences between those two approaches. So now, Yehuda had a decision to make. Which approach do I take? Or do I take both approaches? So turn the page, you'll see how the Malbim brings this into the text itself. So number one, he's first going to focus on the differences. Number one, Aleph. Harotze lischos derech mishpat. If a person wants to win using the legal strategy, tzarech laharich bedevarim, a person who's looking to win with the legal approach has to drag the matter out in it, right? Or laharich bidvar means you have to elongate your speech. You have to really go through every detail to bring up every proof, to revisit every claim against you. Exactly. Aval hamevakish chesed. But when a person's looking for a pardon, ein lo laharich, you don't have to go on and on. You have to admit to your mistake, and you just have to beg for mercy. In fact, it's insulting when a person is clearly guilty and they spend the time trying to weasel out of their conviction by claiming they didn't do it. That's not usually the most effective approach. You have to man up. If you did something wrong, you did something wrong. Exactly. So that's one difference that the Malbim notes. Again, if you are looking to make a legal claim, your arguments are much longer, and you're focusing on the facts. If you're looking to make a claim for just to be pardoned, for clemency, right? So then you just sort of look to stir the emotions of the one making the decision about your future. That's one difference. Beis, additionally, b'derech mishpat yiske etzel hashoftim. If a person wants to go through the legal system, so who do you have to speak to? You have to speak to the judges. Aval b'derech chesed lo yiske rak etzel hamelech. But if you're looking for a pardon, who do you have to go to? You have to go to the king. Exactly. Again, using our American legal system, we know that if you're trying to fight something in the courts, you can take it all the way up to the Supreme Court, for example. But the Supreme Court can't pardon you. There's only one person who has the power to pardon. That's the president. So it's the very same idea that the Malbim is referring to at this juncture. You have to go to the king if you're looking for a pardon. Shebiyado lahavir al avono bichasto. It's only in the king's jurisdiction, the king's power, to grant somebody clemency. Yehuda understood that if he would take the legal approach, he would fail. How can you try to win a legal battle with someone who is so clearly stronger than you are? I would also add, not only that, the goblet was found in Ibn Yamin's sack.
Yehuda knew that Binyamin didn't steal it,
but the point is, the facts on the ground were that it was found in Binyamin's sack. So it's harder to take that approach. Not only that, Yehuda was thinking, this guy that I'm standing in front of pleading for our lives, he's such a cruel, vicious person. He's not going to be interested in my factual argument. He's going to say, the bottom line is, the goblet was found in Benjamin's sack. There's nothing to do to argue about that. Lachain ba lishol derech chesed. So Yehuda makes the very critical decision at this juncture to approach with the request for mercy. Uvazet zarech levakish meis Yosef ba'atzmo. And that's why Yehuda brings up his grievances, if you will, with Yosef himself. Shayakocho kikoach hamelech lasos chesed. Because Yehuda understood that this person is the one who is empowered to make the decisions of pardoning somebody, just like Paro was. Now, remember, the Netziv would say that that's a very, very touchy issue. The Malbim is sort of saying it as a davar pashut. Yeah, the person sitting in the viceroy chair also had the power to pardon just as the king did. Va'al zeh, and that's why the Torah begins, Va'igash elav Yehuda. That's what the Torah tells us that Yehuda approaches. Ki techila hayut hatainos lifnei kol hanitzavim sham kederech hamishpatim sheit amtsu bo kol hashoftim shehayu im Yosef behishafto. So originally, Yehuda makes his claim in front of all of the people there because he was trying to take the legal approach. So as you said before, Dr. Nemzer, Alan, I don't remember which of you made that observation. But there were other people, Dr. Nems, I think it was you, there were other people in the room who apparently, the Malbim understands, were like part of the judicial system. They're part of the team there of people making decisions about the law. So initially, Yehuda tries to make a legalistic argument and seek Binyamin's forgiveness. No, not for really acquittal. That's what he was looking for. From a legal perspective, he was looking for Binyamin to be released of his guilt. But that didn't work. Now, I'm not exactly sure which text the Malbim is referring to. Because if you look at the end of Parshas Miketz, which is still Perek Mem Dalid, you don't see Yehuda making any pleas, to anybody, quite frankly. So I don't exactly know what the Malbim is referring to, but the Malbim is writing that initially Yehuda takes this approach that I'm going to make a legal, formal argument in front of the judges that are there. I just want to look back one more time, just for a moment. Yehuda does speak at the end of Parshas Miketz. He says, "Man amar la adoni, man nedaber umanit dada. Kalokim matzas avon avdacha, kinenu avadim la adoni. Where we'll be servants, gam anachnu, gam asher nimtza hagivya biado. We'll all be servants." And Yosef says, "Chalivli masozos. I would never do this. Haish asher nimtza hagivya biado, hu yali laved. Only the one who was found with a goblet will be my servant." So I don't know exactly what the Malbim is referring to over here, but the Malbim says, originally, Yehuda was speaking to the judges. Originally, Yehuda made claims in front of everybody who was there in the form of, and everybody was there, was serving as in capacity of a judge. Again, I don't fully understand where that text relays that information, but let's say that that's the way the Malbim understands what took place. But then, v'ata with an ayin means now, nigash elav levado. Now, Yehuda approaches Yosef alone. Then he begins to plead. Please, can I speak with you alone? I'm no longer looking to take that legalistic argument. Now I'm asking simply for your kindness. I'm looking for you to pardon my brother. I'm only going to speak in your ears. I'm going to ignore everyone else in the room that I have been speaking to prior. Where that occurred, I'm not sure, but we can assume that that happened prior, and now I'm just speaking to you because I understand that you're really the only one with the power to deal with this issue. Not from a legal perspective, because I've got nothing to say anymore, but now from a humanistic side, from a emotional plea. That's what I'm going to be doing now. I'm going to ask you to please forgive my brother. Okay, there's much more to be said, but I actually have to hop off now. I have to run to a meeting across the bridge. So we'll stop over here.